This podcast is sponsored by El Spelio. So what are you caving with? You got a good primary light? Chances are, if you're listening to this, you probably do. Do you like it? Like, do you really like it? Because I don't know. I feel like if you're going to go caving as often as you do, you should really like your light. It should be a light that can take anything. A little water, a little impact, no problem. Got to change the batteries? Get the rechargeable ones. There are any number of issues that can come up from having a substandard light. If you're going caving, you should really have the best, and El Spelio is among the best. And right now, you can get their top-of-the-line light, the El Spelio Lunatic, or for a little less, you can get the El Spelio Grinta, which just went up at elspelio.com. If you've looked at the price of the Lunatic and thought, I don't know about that right now, look at the Grinta 1700. I put up a link in the description of this podcast. And if you got the cash, pull the trigger. And don't forget to use that promo code PODCAST. That's good for $20 off any order of $300 or more. elspelio.com, promo code PODCAST. Welcome to the Caving Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Pelser of the Central Indiana Grotto, former chairman. This month I've got the chair of the Louisville Grotto, and we talk a little bit about grotto leadership in this episode. Oh, okay, what's a grotto? If you're just joining us, first of all, welcome. We're excited to share the world of caving with you. As will be discussed on this episode, the world of caving can be a little secretive sometimes. And if you've encountered that, don't be discouraged by it. We have our reasons. Again, we'll talk about it. We'll get to Holly's interview in just a little bit, but the thing about caving is it's really safe if you know what you're doing, and quite the opposite if you don't. And in order to learn how to do it the right way, you really need to get involved with organized caving, because you really just can't, you shouldn't just go do it by yourself. So get in touch with people who know how to do it and like doing it. And your local grotto is just a few clicks away. I've got a link to the NSS website, specifically the page where you can find your local grotto, in the description of this podcast, so check that out too. So you can get in with us, and maybe we'll see you on a trip soon. Real quick, thanks for all the Instagram love. A lot of cavers coming out of the woodwork following on Instagram, and I'm following you back. I'm really, really glad to see all the stories and posts from cavers. Just really, really cool, impressive stuff that's going on, and it's heartening to see young people posting about it on Instagram. Bravo to that cleanup in Tennessee over the weekend. Rachel Saker hit me to that. You guys found a freezer with meat in it? Gross. That's what cavers do. They go and they clean up these places so that, I don't know, maybe we can go in them sometime. All these old sinkholes that farmers used to dump tires in. That's a feature. That's a karst feature, man. Be cool to be able to explore that, right? Anyway, thank you if you're doing that. Goodness knows if I weren't in the middle of a toddler hurricane, I'd be out there doing it. I dream of having a volunteer weekend. who knows? Maybe I'll see you out at one once I get the chance. I posted on Instagram. I have to do so for work, you know. I'm on the radio in Indianapolis, and so I have to have an Instagram account. I mostly post stories of, like, breaks that I'll do in the morning, and occasionally I'll put up pictures in the main feed, and I put up my microphone collection, because that's a thing that I am into, collecting vintage microphones, usually cheap stuff, and got a lot of love. I got a lot of love from cavers, as well as listeners of the radio station, but cavers showed up for that one. I appreciate that. In fact, the mic that I'm talking on right now was in that picture, the blue one in the back, the Shure 556, probably my favorite of all the vintage microphones that I have, because as you can hear, it sounds pretty darn good still, 60 years later. And so anyway, that's just a silly thing that I'm into. I'd love to see you at an event. I'm trying to decide whether or not at the next caving event I'll bring my vintage microphones to do the interviews on. I think that'd be pretty cool. Be a little cumbersome, though. So anyway, thanks again. You can find me on Instagram at Matt Pelser Radio. It looks good if I got a lot of followers, you know, because of the whole radio brand thing. So if you're on Instagram and you feel like giving me a follow, I promise I won't spam you. I just put up something in the story every day. I got to put some caving-related stuff up, you know, if I ever go caving again anytime soon. Somebody who does a lot of caving is Holly McClintock. She was so fun to talk to. She's chaired the Louisville Grotto for 10 years. And as you'll hear, we start the interview with this. She's done most of her caving in Roppel. And if you're going to do most of your caving anywhere, I think I share this again later in the interview. It might as well be Roppel. It's a caver's cave. And I had a great time in Roppel at Spelio Fest. Again, we'll talk about it. But anyway, Holly was just a lot of fun. I'd heard a lot about her from people in my own grotto, the Central Indiana Grotto. You know, I bumped into her at Spelio Fest. You know, I saw her around and was like, oh, that's Holly. Great. Maybe I'll get a chance to talk to her. Of course, I never did because she was super busy. But I'm glad I finally caught up to her. Holly and I talked about a lot, and it was a real pleasure. Here's me and Holly McClintock.
90% of my caving's for Offal.
Yeah. Okay. Any particular entrance?
Dalio and Weller.
I did the Dalio when I was down there for Spelio Fest. Yeah, it's the blob, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. You went with Kelly.
We went with Kelly.
Did she take you to... Oh, shoot. I'm having a brain block. See, this is what's going to happen to me is I have brain blocks. what is that area? It has a bunch of formations coming down, a bunch of stalactites.
Is it on the way to the blob?
Or no. Could an offshoot? No, did you all turn around at blob?
We turned around at blob. Yeah, we weren't even supposed to.
Fairyland.
She was telling us about that. We were supposed to turn around before the blob, but we had such a fast group that we made it to the blob, and I was thankful for that because I was looking at the map the day before, and I was like, okay, all right, so we're going to go here, and she says it's going to take this long, and I don't know about the rest of the group, but I can make it there pretty quick, I would imagine, because I had been in there the day before with Kevin?
Kevin Downs.
Kevin Downs, yeah, and one other person. It was just the three of us, and so... I was like, yeah, all right, so we're going to go here and here, and we're going to hop, okay, all right, so we'll be along the same route most of the day, anyway.
Yeah, there's not a lot of route. I mean, once you, because you have to get to Grand Junction. If you're going through Dalio, you basically have to get to Grand Junction to get to anywhere.
Yeah.
So you're going to be doing all of that every time.
All right, so sweet. So a lot of caving in Roppel. I mean, and if you're going to spend most of your time in one cave, Roppel's the one to do it. I would imagine. I mean, I had a blast. That is a caver's cave. When was your first trip in Roppel?
Let's see. I think my first trip in Roppel would have been 2008. My very first trip ever with organized caving was in Roppel. I just lucked out on that one.
Oh, really? And that was 08?
Yes. I read the book Beyond Mammoth Cave, which is basically all about the connection of Roppel Cave to Mammoth Cave. And I didn't even know that you could go caving. Like, I didn't even know it was a thing, you know. And so I read this book, and then I got on the computer, and I stumbled across Louisville Grotto. And somehow on the web, I found a talk of a woman's trip happening to Roppel Cave. And I was like, Roppel Cave? Like, could this be the same Roppel Cave that I just read about? That, I mean, I was just so excited about while reading. And it was, and I contacted them and I said, hey, you know, I go caving, I do like some rock climbing stuff, you know, I go hiking, or I don't know, go, I didn't say caving. I said, I go hiking and I go rock climbing and kayaking, and I'm a pretty active person, and give me a chance. And they emailed me back and said, come on. And that was how it got started for me. I was hooked from that moment on.
Was it kind of like, cause I remember it wasn't my first trip or even my second trip. I want to say it was my third or fourth caving trip. It was with, you know, an organized caving group. It was with the CIG, my current grotto. And I remember the first, you know, couple trips with a friend of mine who was a member of the CIG. And he was trying to get me to join, you know, you got to join up and do all this. And I found out that they were going to a cave that he had told me about. And I was like, I'd love to see that one. Yeah, I was like on eggshells. I was like, is that okay? Like you said, give me a chance, because, you know, can we? And I didn't, and it, obviously at that point, I didn't know that it's pretty loosey goosey. You know, you just get all in touch with the right people and you're in as long as you can keep up, right?
Yeah, things can happen.
So, 08, I mean, that was 14 years ago, but, you know, when you're someone, you know, my age, I'm in my mid 30s, 15 years doesn't seem like quite all that long ago, but you've gotten pretty involved in this last 14 years.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, definitely.
Yeah. And so a lot of Roppel caving, mm-hmm. big involvement with the Louisville Grotto. Let's go back to the early days in Roppel. I mean, was it all Roppel at the beginning there?
It's pretty much been all Roppel, my whole caving
career.
Caving career. I don't know. I hesitate to use the word career.
Me too, really, but it's career, like, give me a better word, you know?
Right.
We're not making any money doing this, but.
Yeah. So I guess I got involved in caving in 2008. My first trip was Roppel. And then my next couple of trips that I did were Roppel. And then by 2000, I guess it was 2010, I started actually getting involved in project caving, not necessarily in Roppel. I was kind of doing stuff with Steve Gentry and just Louisville Grotto and small caves and just kind of learning how to survey. And then by 2012 is when I became chairman of the Louisville Grotto, and I definitely became more project oriented. And that's when I really started kind of beginning my surveys and Roppel. I guess my first few trips were more digs because I didn't sketch, and I had to have access to a book person. And so I kind of focused on some digs to get started. And then, you know, once you do some trips and kind of got people realizing you're interested and you are working, then you get abilities to get a hold of other people and they want to cave with you too.
Yeah.
That kind of worked out.
It's good to get that group together you can call on. Hey, I want to go this weekend. You up for it? You know?
Right.
So, I mean, all right. So digging, that's a thing you really got to love in order to do it enough.
You really do. Because there's a spot called Corella de Ville that I went with Bill Kirshner, and it's in Roppel Cave, and it takes about not quite 4 hours, 4.5 hours just to get there. And you end up in this like 8-inch high thing that's like not even 12 inches wide. And you basically got to stick your left arm in and dig a little bit on like the right wall, bring it out. And it's like just floppy mud, stick it over to the side, then go in with your right arm and, you know, just taking turns. But yeah, basically you can't even get both arms in some places. So it takes tenacity, I guess, would be.
I'd say that's a good word for it. How did that ever turn into anything?
That one has Kelly McDermott kind of took that one over, and she has made some progress on it. It's just really tight. So no, we haven't pushed that one as much as like we did when we pushed the Bijou Alley dig. That one actually became a successful dig for us, and pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah, I think Kelly was telling me about that. Is that the one where it seems like on the datum it's close to the surface almost, and maybe there were some flies in there, or was that something else she was telling me about?
I felt like there was talk of one fly in there.
Ah.
So yes, I believe she did make it further in that dig, because she went, I think she's gone 4 trips since I have. So yeah, she may have seen something that I don't know about.
So
I do recall a fly, though, as you're entering into it. I do recall once seeing one.
Like, ooh, where'd you come from, buddy?
Right. Can I just... it's pretty far back.
Yeah. Kelly's she's a heck of a caver. She took me on a great trip there in Roppel. How much of Roppel have you seen? Do you pretty much do the same thing every time you go in? You go to the new frontiers, wherever you're headed? Or are you pretty familiar with the whole of Roppel?
I don't want to say I'm familiar with all of Roppel, because it's 97 miles, of which I was actually on the survey trip.
I spoke over 97 miles. 97,
But yeah, so no, I definitely don't want to say that I know it all. I know a good portion of it, possibly a third of it, maybe a third. I don't think I know even quite half of it. But what I do know, I know decently well. So right now we have been focusing on multiple different areas, and as far as the furthest, I'm working the northwest section right now. There's a, maybe not quite the tip of the northwest section, but it's almost to the tip of it. And it's a really good lead, and we are hopeful to connect to another cave. That would add another mile or two to it if we could connect to that cave. So that would be an interesting thing. And then I know the northwest side is trending towards Salts, which I know Mammoth is already connected to that, but I don't think Roppel is. Well, I know Roppel's not. So that would be another cool little connection to make too.
Little loop-de-loop in the Mammoth system. Now, okay, with Roppel being connected to Mammoth, do you have to deal with the park? You have to report to the park when you find new passage? I mean, I don't know. What do you have to do?
No, so Mammoth Cave system is surveyed by Cave Research Foundation,
right,
and Central Kentucky Karst Coalition. So you got two organizations. Roppel Cave is basically CKKC, and then the park area is more CRF. So if we are going in through a CRF expedition, then yes, we are dealing with the park, and we have to kind of go under their policies, but it's still slightly different because we're not on park property. And then any trip that I do that is not during a CRF expedition is just automatically a CKKC trip or expedition. And I just report to Jim Borden on that. We have to use the Compass course. There's a Compass course at the Cave Research Foundation, Hamilton Valley. And then there is also a Compass course at the Dalio entrance to Roppel. And that's the SCCI Preserve Dalio entrance. But I do the Compass course. I do my book. I instantly scan it and get it to Borden, turn anything Roppel into Borden. Now, I've been working on the Morrison survey team too, which Morrison's is another entrance, the Turley entrance to Mammoth Cave. Sorry, my cat just attacked me. But the Turley entrance to Mammoth Cave. And that one is different. That is on the park property. And so, yes, I have to deal with more
of that.
Yeah, there is more policies and things on that one.
And that's a whole thing. I don't know. I guess the whole Kentucky Caver politics thing has kind of always fascinated me. I know it's a touchy subject. That whole thing is just kind of fascinating to me, the dynamics of it. Now,
Kentucky Cave politics.
Yeah. I mean, you were talking about Beyond Mammoth Cave. You could write a whole book on Kentucky Cave politics. I don't know if anyone would read it, but I'd be on the list.
Oh, somebody would, because everybody loves that kind of stuff. Drama.
Do you think it's more dramatic than it needs to be?
I think people build things up to make it worse than what it really is. But then again, I know that I almost hesitate to say this, but then
that's
again,
fine. It's fine.
Stuff like this needs to be said. You know, we had during Spelio Fest, we were using a cave and we specifically said, this is an Amish owned cave and please don't change clothing where the Amish can see you. And you know, we made it known and people didn't, and they showed their naked butt to the owners and then we lost access to the cave. So, you know, that is a thing with why is cave politics so hard? Well, because some people don't realize how quickly you lose access to a cave. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this was something that we enjoyed going to this cave and we were attempting to allow others to enjoy it. And just one act of not common courtesy kind of messed it up now for everybody.
Yeah.
And so I think if people could step back instead of seeing a self-centered, I need access to that, and saw the whole full big picture of, well, we all want access to that. So let's all work together to be responsible and keep it.
And I think that that's important to talk about, because I think that there are some people who are frustrated by the whole caving politics thing and why, you know, now in 2022, is this a thing? You know, why do we need to be so secretive when the internet's out there and all that? But really, when you get close to it like that, there are so many little variables that can jeopardize just if not a whole project, then just access to some cool place, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, don't go storming in like a bull in a china shop thinking, okay, well, there it is. I know where it is. I'm going to go in. You know, that stinks. I'm sorry to hear about that. There's stuff like that happens everywhere. We've had stuff like that happen here in Indiana, you know?
And it's like, how do we get everybody to be respectful and team players? It can't happen. Mm-hmm. It's never going to happen. All we can do is encourage and try to show good behavior, lead by example, I guess.
Yeah. And make the literature that we give out as brief and succinct as possible so that they have no excuse but to read it. Don't
right,
change
point.
Clothes in front of the Amish guy. So Roppel, what do you like about visiting Roppel? I mean, when you ask somebody about their favorite cave, it takes a lot of people time to think about it because it's like, well, I don't know, it's just my cave. But what do you like about Roppel? I could tell you what I liked about it, but I want to hear it from you.
I don't know. It captured me. I'm a very passionate person, and the adventure, I mean, it has everything.
It really does.
Yeah, it has everything. And so I don't know. I really don't know how to answer that. I know why I'm doing the project caving right now, because I can answer why when people say, How come you've never gone to Tag, or how come you don't go to other caves? And I guess my thing is, well, right now I'm fit and I can do what I'm doing. And I feel like that's a very short lived possibility of being able to do this. And at some point in time, I'm not going to be able to do what I can do right now. And at that point in time, that's when I will go and enjoy other caves and, you know, go to Tag and have fun. But right now, I just feel that while I can focus and be able to get out to these far reaches inside Rapel through this tough stuff, that this is what I want to focus on.
Now, okay, when you're talking about getting to the far reaches, I know there's multiple routes, I know there's multiple frontiers and things like that, but when you talk about the hazards or the challenges, maybe not hazards, but the challenges on the way, that's what I always like about good long trips, you know, to remote areas. What are we talking in Rapel? When I was in Rapel, it was pretty, I could do it, you know, and I go caving in Indiana where there's a lot of crawling, a lot of mud. There was a little bit of crawling, a little bit of mud, but mostly I was, you know, I was upright walking. There's some hopping, there's some climbing, there's some things like that, but really you just got to put in the miles. Where you're going, what's on the way?
I mean, so we have to go through what you're talking about too. And Lower Elysian Way is a lot of walking. It's just long. So there is a lot of that, just walking in knee high, waist high water, but you've got a lot of the crawling and contorting through slop mud, cold stuff too. Like if you're going through Transgressions Trail, that's tight, narrow canyon, squeezing, contorting. If you're going towards, let's see here, Great White North, you have to, that's 110 foot pitch. You got to climb up 110 foot of rope. And then you got to go through some like really, really, really beautiful gypsum canyon. So that is, you could fly through it and break everything, but nobody wants to do that because it's too gorgeous. So mm-hmm. then that you're almost like contorting and trying to just not break pretties. So, and then let's see here, I guess, when we went into, what is that, Old Mill Crawl, that is nothing but slow, low crawl and just pooled water, slop, everybody kind of mutinied on it. I think we had one person that didn't mutiny on that trip. So
how long is that crawl? Well, you're talking about mutiny from cavers. I mean, it's got to be pretty intense.
It was water. It was more the water. Yeah, the crawl, I don't think it was, we weren't in there for more than 150 feet before the water, I think, on that one got so bad that we weren't quite prepared for what we were getting into and had to back out on that one.
Okay, so Eros Trail. So what is, I had not seen this. What, you were on the team that found that, or you found that? What's the story there?
Yes, we did. So in 2018, October of 2018, We went out there. This was a CRF expedition, and James Wells led us out there to the area of Bijou Alley, which is going to be located above Yahoo, going towards the west, like Yahoo is. Let's see here. We were just trying to see if a dig was even able to happen, and so we started moving some. When we got out there, it was basically just rock collapse everywhere, and we were just trying to figure out, where would we even start digging? So we just picked a spot and started moving some rock, digging straight down, and nothing really happened.
Was there airflow? Was there like stuff to indicate? No, really? Okay.
Nothing at that point. So we moved about, I don't know, 8 feet or so and started digging another 20 minutes. I mean, not 20 feet, about 20 minutes and still nothing. So we were like, third time, let's pick one more place before we take off and go to a backup objective. So we moved another 10 foot forward and we started just digging straight down. It's basically just rock crumble, gypsum, sand, crumbly rock, breakdown. We started moving it and we dropped down about a foot and a half, and it was like, hey, you know, okay, we actually did something here. Let's put a little bit of effort in here. So we spent about an hour and we were moving rocks and moving sand, and we were packing this little dry bag of gypsum sand into it, and we were singing like to the Chaka Khan beat, you know, Chaka Khan, Chaka Khan. We were like, Saka sand, Saka sand. I love it when you pass me Saka sand, Saka sand. And so we were having a good old time in this thing and kind of had like, you know, four people train passing rocks behind our heads and behind our backs.
You had a thing going.
And all this. Yeah. And all of a sudden we moved a rock, and we opened up this little golf ball size hole. It was no bigger than a golf ball. And we threw a little pebble down this little tiny golf ball size hole. And we were like, I bet that went 12 feet. So then suddenly there was excitement in the air, and we were really moving rocks, you know, sack of sand. I love it when you pass me sack of sand, and stuff was moving really good. And we opened up a little section that was about 7 inches wide and 12 inches long. And we could see a canyon below, and it was dropping down about 12 feet. And the smallest of us was Laura Lexander. And so we shoved her down into this thing. I cannot believe she fit, but she did. And she fit, and she was able to move forward probably about 10 feet and said that she could see that it was still going. You know, none of us could get in there with her. So basically, I'm pretty sure we were just like, you know, don't get stuck, come back out. And so then that kind of, and the air, I did forget to mention, that's when the air, it was like air conditioner just turned on once we opened it up enough to where it was 7 inches wide. So the excitement in me really, really was captured. And I took teams back for 4 more trips. We did five aggressive persuasion type trips in there before we finally got through. And then after we got through, we discovered a little room with a low ceiling. It was about 2.5 high. It was about 8 wide, I think. And we crawled forward at this point, thinking that that was the better looking area. And that just kind of crapped out on us. And again, was just this like tight canyon that we didn't think we could do anything. We thought we were going to have to do more persuasion. And so it was like, oh, bummer. You know, we were so excited. And then coming back out, we saw this little tiny lead going off on the left wall, or well, it would have been right if you were coming in. We saw this little lead. And so we went ahead and I kind of wormed my way over top of this rock. I don't even know exactly how I fit through this thing right at first. And I crawled forward about 40 feet or so. And next thing I know, I was standing up, and you would not believe the excitement at that point in time. I was, I'm standing. Yeah. And so, that led, we discovered more than 2,000 feet of cave that we, surveyed
all through that little golf ball.
Yeah. Through a little golf ball size hole. So it was very exciting. We've had 11 trips in all, counting the digs also. And at this point in time, we are out of walking passage or even like nice crawling passage. We're back to tight digs, but we have a bolt climbing lead that's still left to do that would actually be back up at the height of Bijou Alley level. So that is actually a lead that is very much so worth doing. And then the lead that we're working at in the HM, which would be the furthest in that, the furthest west part of that, I think, that would be the dig. And it's kind of heading towards Yahoo. We are all joking, you know, we're just going to dig and pop right into Yahoo. And I don't know if anybody's going to be happy about that or not, but that's kind of what we're joking. It's more likely to head towards the 700 plus lead, but that's not as fun of a joke. The 700 plus lead is like this, like 8-inch high. For at this point in time, it's like 800 feet.
Oh, God.
8-inch high. Yeah. We have a great picture of Krista Bartel and I were the last two in there. And there's like this whiteout bottle, and the whiteout bottle makes it look like this borehole pass. I don't know. I don't even know. It's so, we were in such tight, tight stuff right there.
Good grief.
Yeah, and at this point in time, if we go into the HM back through Bijou Alley and connect into the 700-plus lead, I don't even know which would be more miserable, to just come out the 700-plus or to backtrack all the way through our H lead.
And those are those survey station letters? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Gotcha. All right. I didn't know if those were named or something like that.
Yeah, I don't really have that. So we named it the trail, the Arrows Trail going in, and then we have Jump Around Dome in there because it was this huge dome and it's just completely full of gypsum flowers, you know, first big dome to ever discover. So it was that, you know, our team ever discovered. So we were jumping around. Yeah. Kind of named it Jump Around Dome. And then there's two more domes that are really pretty also, not as big. That was the Dome of Requirement. And then there's a second dome back there that we haven't really named it. And there's a little canyon coming off the last dome at Dome of Requirement that's going to hook into Jump Around Dome. We know it will because we've done voice connection, but it's so tight back there and it's so pretty that we just didn't, push our way through. Mm. We did a, like I said, we did voice connection on that only.
Man, how exciting. So this was 2018?
Bijou Alley Dig was 2018. We broke through into Arrows Trail in 2019. And then I guess the majority of it was getting surveyed in 2019. And then during the October expedition of 2021 was my last trip out there. The October CRF expedition, we did another trip out there and dug and made a little bit, another 25 feet.
So that's further. So that's the same frontier you're still working right now, would you say?
So I've got multiple different places. That's a good area to go when it's wet. So like if there's a lot of rain out there and I have to abandon going to the northwest section, then I can go to Bijou Alley and Arrows Trail because it's a dry gypsum dry area.
I think we've already kind of talked about what I liked about Roppel, but it really just does have a little bit of everything.
It does have everything. It's got so many, it's got all your pretty formations. It's got adventure. It's got the sporty climb. It's got the easy walking. It's got beautiful big canyons. It's just got everything.
Have you ever been lost in there?
Yes. not like lost to where somebody had to come get me, but lost to where I sat down, and I love to say that we all turned our lights off and the cave rotated.
Doesn't it feel like a mistake.
The cave rotated. So then we went the wrong way. And then it took, about 10 minutes or so to just kind of get reoriented of, what did I do wrong here?
Yeah.
How did I even make this mistake? And then backtrack and find the right way out.
It just seems so mazy, especially when you get to Grand Junction. And if you lose your composure for a second in Grand Junction, you're like, wait, which way did I come from? Which way were we going? Gosh.
You can pay attention to water flow.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Just so many beautiful areas. And with the Dalio entrance, that's kind of evolved a little bit over the last few years, right? There's been some digging in there and some development.
Oh, we've also been doing the water drainage project, which has
the big culvert in there.
Yeah, the big culvert in there. Kevin Downs and Dick Market have done an incredible amount of work in there, well over a year worth of work. We've had other people assisting them and moving rocks too. But basically, rocks wash in, and you've got the crawl going in. And the rocks fill up the crawl. So the crawl gets tighter and tighter and tighter. And if you don't remove the rocks, you will eventually not have a crawlway into the cave.
Right.
So we have opened what happened was there is a drain and a dome down below near the crawl, and it filled in so that the natural drain itself kind of filled in with rocks and was no longer working. And so all of it was going into the crawl. So all they have been working on is reopening the natural drain, and then they stuck the culvert in to kind of keep the natural drain from plugging from the rock fill. And then getting the culvert in was 2 days worth of working. About 12 of us that showed up to help get these culverts into place. And it was a lot of work. We moved a lot of rock, and like I said, Kevin and Dick have moved a massive amount of rock out of that cave to just keep it clear so that everybody can still enjoy it.
I mean, Dick's a character. I mean, cool is it that he's still getting in there? Well, how old is he? He's 80 now?
Probably right around there. And I was actually in Roppel with him in January. It was mid-January. We removed 40 buckets of rock from right there in front of the culvert on that day and then just put it into the gravel road.
Have you seen the thing he can do with his sternum from years of caving? Has he shown you? No.
I
was with Kevin, and we were just talking to Dick because he was there, at the trailer with his wife, and he said, "Watch this," and he pushed on his sternum, and it like went in like a half an inch, and he's like, "That's from caving." It's from years of caving. I'm all gristle right there.
That's crazy. And yet I believe it.
I believe it too.
Because he's a beast.
He's definitely
a beast.
I mean, I didn't believe it when Kevin told me he was like 80. I was like, that dude doesn't look 80. He's like it looks like my dad's age. Good grief.
Yeah, it's still well built and everything. Yeah.
Getting in there, getting it done. Okay, right. So All right. So you're you're still the chair of the Louisville Grotto?
Yes. I've been chairman of the Louisville Grotto. I'm in my 10th term now.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you don't have term limits there like we do.
Decade of being chairman.
So you were there for the acquisition of Lone Star?
No. When I became chairman, within 2 years, we paid off the loan, the original loan, and then we bought another section, the Polston property, and that secured our right-of-way. And then we bought the woodcutters section, which was another 48 acres. We bought the woodcutters cave section in January of 2017, and we don't have that quite paid off yet.
Okay. But still, I mean, for you to have that asset.
It's a 126 acre cave preserve with six caves on the property that are surveyed. And we've just recently discovered a seventh cave.
Ooh.
And Woodcutter's Cave, we've got a huge discovery that's just happened in there. Phil Sullivan and Nick Anderson pushed through Sawtooth Canyon area and discovered Borehole Cave down there, of which we were actually just surveying in on Sunday. I think my team got like 400, 500 feet of survey, and then I don't know what the other team got. So we're working on some exciting stuff there. I think we're going to have more than a mile of cave, and Woodcutter's Cave is going to be more than a mile here very, very soon.
Oh,
so that's
wow.
Very exciting stuff.
Was there access to Woodcutters at Spelio Fest this past year? Were there a few people going in there?
Yes.
Okay. I think I had a neighbor. I was camped out. I couldn't tell you where exactly I was camped out. It's kind of like when you come in, you go up the hill past where you got registration set up, and then you just keep going, and then there's this big clearing.
That's
where I camped.
Woodcutters. Oh, you were in Woodcutter's Field
then. Okay, all right, well, that makes sense, because it was a big clearing where people cut wood out of there. Yeah, because I think my neighbor who I was camped next to, a guy from Virginia, I think he went in Woodcutters that weekend.
Now, Woodcutters is a great cave. It's one of my favorites for taking new people in and just seeing how they do, because it's not like it's got a whole bunch of formations. It's basically a canyon that goes back a quarter of a mile and has a series of like little 8-foot drops. And so, you know, obviously you got to climb back up these little 8-foot drops, but it's got beautiful scallops, and the geology of it is really pretty. You've got this down cut with this chert layer that goes through that you can see where the water eroded it out. So that's actually a really, really beautiful area. But it's a sporty cave, so you can take people in and you see if they really like caving when they're new, you know. And if they like that, odds are they're going to enjoy other stuff. But if they don't like that, then maybe they either need bigger caves, or I don't want to say it's not their hobby, but you know, you either love it or you don't. It's kind of.
It's a good shakedown. Good shakedown cave. I had a great time at Lone Star and Lone Star Saltpeter Cave there. Do you know a little more about the history of that cave? Because I had just a great time with the wine and cheese thing and then walking in there. And you had the beautiful candles up over the entrance, which I guess you put up there.
Yeah, a couple of us did, yes.
It was just gorgeous. I mean, I rounded the corner and started walking toward it, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is the coolest thing ever. I may have had a couple beers at that point, but it was just, look, I go to Indiana Cave Capers every year, but that's an event where we move, and we don't own these places, and so we can't do stuff like that. And most of the time where we do them, there's not a cave on the property. This was so cool to me, for you to have the caves there, and then to have this beautiful huge cave entrance decorated in that way where we could just kind of walk in. So there was a mushroom farm in there. They mined saltpeter, all kinds of stuff.
The mushroom farm happened in there, of which we didn't, during this year, we didn't do the lights. We usually do the candles all the way up to the mushroom room, and you can see where the donkey trail actually went around and circled around the whole room and then came back out. And then if you go further back in there, across the bridge and back towards the breakdown, there's actually a couple Civil War, I think they're either Civil War signatures or like War of 1812, somewhere in there. But there's a sergeant in there. We also have an Andy Collins signature, which is a relative of Floyd Collins. So I like to kind of talk about Floyd Collins in that area to newer people. Yeah, and you can still see a little bit of evidence of the saltpeter mining that happened in there, but there's not a whole bunch. So I think more of the mounds and stuff now are just from where people went back in after that and were looking for arrowheads, possibly.
Okay.
Stuff like that.
It just seemed to me like a classic, like one of those classic saltpeter caves where, you know, there was a lot of dirt at one time and it was all just kind of brought out and made this just huge cavity, you know, that you could do whatever with.
Yeah.
It's just such a cool resource that you've got there, historically and otherwise.
Yeah, we feel that there's a possibility that they were stashing a lot of that dirt on that. You know, when you're going in, there's a passage to the right that I've actually got that labeled Holly's Dig because it goes back 100 feet. And back there, it was just kind of silted up until about, there was like a 7-inch gap that you could just see a good 40 or 50 feet back. And so we started digging and we've got this like 2-foot wide, 2-foot high trench, basically just a trench going straight back. And it's going back over 60, I think we're about 67 feet now, but it's clear that that's all just wash in, you know, I guess as floods have come in, it's hit the mud that they kind of moved out of their way, the dirt that they've moved out of their way. And then it's kind of flattened it. And I do believe that's how it filled in. And so we're hopeful that we can connect to Peccary Cave across the street through that dig. You know, it's an elliptical tube that you can just look at and realize this must do something. We just got to move the dirt, put it out of the way.
I mean, is that all you got to do? You just got to do that, right?
We just got to move the dirt and see where it leads.
Peccary Cave, that's not on your property? That's not on the
Peccary Lone Star? Peccary is not on our property. And we actually have, you know, it's mixed feelings because some people were like, this guy's a jerk and he won't let us in his cave. But what really happened is these college people went over there and then they discovered these peccary bones and they told this man, you have something really important here and you need to protect this cave and you need to not let people in here and just let them destroy it. And so this man took the, you know, he's not a caver. He's just an owner. And he took these people as their word as they have some, he has something that doesn't need to be destroyed and people shouldn't be in there. And so he doesn't allow anybody in his cave. And it's unfortunate because it would be interesting to try to connect to Lone Star from Peccary side and see, you know, what our options would be. But
sure.
I've only ever been in that cave once. And I guess I was lucky. I was lucky to have gotten into it that one time. We're going to have our 50th anniversary of Spelio Fest this year.
Is it 50 years already?
50th Spelio Fest.
Was that 50 in a row?
It would be 50. It would have been 51, but 2020 canceled.
Oh yeah.
So, no, it's not 50 in a row.
So you got so Spelio Fest got started in 71 then?
71 or 72. I think it was 72.
All right.
No, it would be 71.
Man, 50 years. That's pretty cool, 50 right? Years.
It is.
How long has Louisville Grotto been around?
Louisville Grotto was started in 1965.
Okay, so one of those long timers.
Yes,
that's pretty cool.
And I guess it's split. It's split from another grotto. I think isn't that kind of how all grottos start?
Yeah,
an organization splits and then another organization's made. And I don't know. I recall knowing at one point in time which one we originated from, or something that split off of us back then. But in the 65, but I don't know what it is now.
So I was chair of the Central Indiana Grotto for one term. I mean, it sounds like you guys can hang on to chairmanship or just officers can hang around for a little while. But we've got like term limits, which was good for me because I became a father during my tenure and I did not have time to do it any longer than the one term I served. But that's a lot of work, especially when you put on a big event the way you guys do and the way we do with Indiana Cave Capers. Our events are a little different in that you're always at Lone Star Preserve. You own Lone Star Preserve, which is cool. We move around, but it doesn't matter. It's so much work. And for you to be at it for 10 years, there's got to be a reason or a few reasons for that. Why do you want to be involved at the level you're involved for as long as you've been?
Okay, so some of it is going to be dedication. I do feel very passionate about it. I feel that when I was talked into becoming chairman, I was very new and naive, I guess would be a good way to say.
Well, isn't that how we all end up being officers?
New and very naive, yes. And so they handed me a binder and it had 3 months worth of agendas in it. And it had maybe like one thing relevant in this binder that even mattered. I didn't even know what that thing was. You know, oh, it was a password to the IOs, to the NSS IOs, of which I didn't even know what the NSS IOs were at the time. And so I realized I knew nothing that I was getting involved in at all. And so I suddenly had to start coming up with monthly grotto trips to and entertain members, I guess, you know. And so I kind of fumbled through for the first year. We did have some drama happen. We had to fight a rock quarry that was trying to open, and the rock quarry would have damaged Neil's cave. So we got our organization together and stood up and went to the meetings, the town meetings, because the town people asked us to. And that, surprisingly, we got a hold of the Kentucky Water Alliance, which was in the end what saved the cave, because the Kentucky Water Alliance was able to prove that this was going to affect life, aquatic life, further down the stream.
So you won.
And so we were able to win, which is just unbelievable. And then, but yeah, so we won the rock quarry battle, which was pretty cool. And then I guess we all started working well together as a group. And you know, and I don't want to say we didn't have problems, but we definitely got a very good core group. And as far as terms, there's just not many people willing to step up to take officer positions. It's a really hard thing. So I guess I have created consistency, and I kind of keep doing stuff the exact same way, which has been a benefit for our grotto and has definitely helped our grotto grow. I'm not against stepping down. I don't necessarily need to be chairman. You know, it's not something I need to be, but I feel that I provide a consistency because we have been so consistent. We have this core group, like we have a good solid core group of people that really are active and really work well together. You know, I don't want to say that we don't have any drama in our grotto, because you know, everybody's got stuff that like that, but I feel like we all really get along, and I love our group of people.
I don't know, it just seems to me, and maybe I'm only talking to certain people, but it just seems to me whenever I talk to a Louisville grotto person, they're just having a good time. Things are going well.
And part of that is because we're so consistent in how we do everything. So, and I think that we are all having fun. I hope everybody's enjoying it. I'm having fun. I'm still having fun.
So I want to say it was, I don't know, I think it was like 2011 or no, it had to have been like 2012 or 2013. Our grotto chairman was Dean Wiseman at the time, and he's got some NSS connections. And I didn't have any NSS connections aside from being a member at that time. And we were trying to figure out some social media stuff for the NSS. And he was like, and we were trying to get our own Twitter account started, which is now defunct. But he was like, could you run the NSS Twitter account? Pointing at me. And I'm like, I mean, I don't know, I guess, maybe. And so, and now I find out you're behind some of the social media with the NSS. What would you say is the state of that? How did that come about?
They were wanting someone to, so my husband is on the NSS social media committee, and he was on there for multiple years before I joined. And he was talking about how they were looking for somebody to help with making posts to create excitement to get people back into wanting to join the NSS. And so that's how I got involved. But it's not as easy as what you might think. You're just going to get on there and make some posts. Well, you got to have content.
Yeah.
You need content. And then not only that, but you got to have content that's not the same thing over and over and over and over again. Otherwise, nobody's paying attention to it. So as the NSS, there's multiple people out there in these committees, and they'll have like stuff that they're doing. And so they'll contact me and say, hey, I need a post to create excitement about this. And they'll give me a little picture. And so then I just kind of take their words and add their picture and, you know, post it.
Well, and so when you're talking about content, when it comes to social media, and then you're also talking about caving, it's like, have you ever run into a situation where someone says, hey, you're saying too much? Like,
oh, for sure.
You're talking too much about that project. You shut your mouth about that project. That's my project, blah, blah, blah. You know, that kind of thing.
For sure. Which is probably why I'm so vague in any kind of conversations that I do. I'm a very, I vague things up.
I do feel like where that's concerned, attitudes are kind of changing. at least from my perspective, but I'm not as close to the project world as maybe you are. How do you feel about that?
Oh, I definitely feel that people are more open in talking about their projects and stuff, and sharing. It's definitely getting into where we can share a lot more. But I still feel that you until you have permission to say some things, you should just definitely watch what you say.
One thing that I think is evolving and is working in the favor of things like, well, like this podcast and like what Derek Bristol does on YouTube and things like that, is there is so much out there, so much information, we're kind of flooded by it. So the concern that we had maybe 30 years ago or even 20 years ago about word getting out about certain things is not the same now, because people have more than enough things to distract them from this little cave project that we're working on or whatever it is right now. Do you feel that way too? Because I get mixed responses on that from people, because it is important to keep certain projects quiet so that only certain people work on them, so that it doesn't get muddled up. But I also feel like, you know, okay, if you're in the caving world, you're already in. And so we don't have to worry about this getting out to the world, I guess, at large, which is why a lot of cavers worry about things like the podcast, things like what Derek Bristol's doing and things like that. But it's only cavers listening, cavers watching.
And like, I think I've been asked before, like, how do you get to go on a ROPL survey trip? Well, you show up, because like the big joke, the big saying in the Beyond Mammoth Cave book is every chapter that ended that was ROPL related, every chapter ended with, and so-and-so never showed up, and so-and-so never went back to ROPL Cave ever again. And so it's like, if we take you on the survey trip, and you go through all this stuff, and then you're willing to show back up, well, we're going to take you. Yeah. I mean, that's half the battle right there, is just getting people to show up and want to participate in that. So I think that, you know, if you're overly secret, you're definitely not going to create the excitement to get people in on your projects. And if they're not excited, then who wants to do it? You know, you have to be open and you have to be inviting to people. But in the same token, a survey trip is expensive. And so, you know, if you've got somebody come in, like Brad Graff comes from Wisconsin to go on a ROPL trip. So we don't need to have somebody on there that we don't know anything about, to where then we get 4 hours into the cave and they're having such a bad situation that we now have to come back out. So you still have to know what you're getting into and who you're getting into it with before you can just kind of jump right into it and take anybody.
Mm-hmm. Totally understand that. Where do you eat after a ROPL trip?
Oh, we usually come out so late that the only option is the Subway at Love's gas station in Horse Cave.
Oh God, no thanks.
I know. Well,
okay, let's say you come out at dinner time and there's actually, you know, if there's places open, where do you go?
Oh, Elmaz in Cave City.
Oh, yeah.
But there's no coming out at dinner time. Yeah, that doesn't happen. So you can come out at, we come out at like 5 in the morning and sleep in our car until like 6:30 in the morning and go to Cracker Barrel and have breakfast.
With the old folks, all right.
Cracker Barrel for breakfast is sometimes have blueberry pancakes, yeah.
This was such a delight, Holly. I enjoyed the hell out of Spelio Fest. I hope I can make it this next year. I don't know. Who knows? Man, what a great event that you guys put on. I'd love to come down and come caving with you in ROPL sometime, even if I don't make Spelio Fest.
Yeah, definitely. Let's do it.
Okay, cool. Holly, chairman of the Louisville Grotto, I really appreciate your time, and keep on keeping on.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Man, if I had some free weekends, I'd come down and do some long trips in ROPL. That cave is something else. Holly, thank you so much. What a great talk. I am glad to tell you, I know who I've got next month. First, let me just thank the sponsors, past and present. Of course, El Spelio, our current sponsor. Save $20 on any order over $300 with the promo code PODCAST. Remember, they've got the El Spelio Lunatic up there and the El Spelio Grinta 1700. It's a great light if you don't want to spend lunatic money. Elspelio.com. I got you linked in the description of this podcast. Also, swagogear.com gets you a pack. It's among the only waterproof packs in the caving world. Again, visit swagogear.com. Charlie, the current chair of the CIG, also runs Organic Robot Designs in Greenfield, Indiana. Charlie, thanks for the shirts this past month. If your grotto needs shirts, hit him up, organicrobotdesigns.com. All right, so next month, my guest is Thomas Hawkins. Oh my gosh, what a great talk Thomas and I had. If you know Thomas, you know. If you don't, just wait. Coming April 1st, my chat with Thomas Hawkins. All right, I think that's it. Yeah, I think we're good. I'll see you next month. Until next time, kill nothing but time.